And welcome to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. How are you guys doing tonight? We are going to be talking this evening about a skull, a fossil, that was found in a part of Asia, Eurasia, known as Georgia. I'm sure you've heard of Georgia, not just Georgia where Atlanta is, but this is Georgia over there in the Russian side of things. And there was a skull found that's 2 million years old that may actually rewrite what we think or what we know of the lineage of the human race. Good evening. I'm Phil Henry. You may think this is a science show. Well, maybe it is, because take a look at what we have on Phil TV. That's right, Kim Kardashian's ass.
Yay! Hello, Mr. Henry.
I understand why you have that picture up, and I understand that it gives men a big thrill, but she really is a beast. She's a beast of a whole other breed.
What's that mean?
It means that, let's be very clear about Kim Kardashian. She's very pretty. But when she turns around and shows everyone that baggage she carries, this is a shot from any zoo, any...
All right, Margaret, just take it easy. There's no reason why you should belittle the woman in such a harsh way. A shot from any zoo. There it is behind me on Phil TV. It was a photograph that Kim Kardashian tweeted out, and this is the term now that is used, tweeted out, as opposed to just tweet. Or did she tweet it out, Bud?
No, she didn't tweet it out. It was on the Instagram.
Yeah, but she put it on Instagram. Well, you tweet it out, though.
No, you don't tweet it out. If you're on Instagram, you're not tweeting. What is...
Well, so was it tweeting, or...
Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't make any difference to me. I mean, I'm not going to get hung up. It was on Instagram. I'll bet you anything she put it on her Twitter account, you know.
Well, what's wrong with saying tweet it out?
Tweet it out sounds asinine. It's just, you tweeted it, you know. In any event, the picture of Kim Kardashian brought about, obviously, massive retweets, 8 billion or something. I don't know how many, but you can well imagine. And it also brought the comment from her husband, Kanye West, on my way home now, be there in 10 minutes, something like that, as if to say, not as if to say, he was saying, take a look at what I get to go home to, thank you.
Hey.
Well, you know, that's what I think about, see, this is where I think Kanye West is badly misinformed, and I think there's an awful lot of men that would agree with me when I say, when Kanye West says that he's looking forward to coming home to that, don't you think there are a lot of men that are thinking that he is mentally deficient or there is some... I didn't say retarded, Phil.
Just be careful, okay?
I didn't say it. That he's mentally deficient, that he's lacking, that perhaps there is a functional aspect to his brain that he was born... You know...
Let's relax here, because a guy's taste in women happens to veer from what may be considered the norm doesn't mean that he has some part of his brain missing or he was born with a motor sensory problem or something like that.
You don't think so? Take a look at that, Phil. That is the hind end of an animal that Frank Buck would...
Why insult the woman?
Take a look at that woman's rear end.
Yes, that is a woman's ass. Excuse my language, I'm using the term.
Oh, God. Well, take a look.
All right, and you're saying what?
John Sid said it's something that Frank Buck knows about.
Do you know who Frank Buck was? A wild game hunter. If Frank Buck saw that in the jungle, that child, Northwest, would not have a mother. Now, you can laugh if you... What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing at all. I'm staring at you. Do I look like I'm laughing?
You're staring at me.
Yes, I'm staring at you.
Since when do people stare this way? Your mouth was wide open.
My mouth was open, agog and aghast at what you just said about Kim Kardashian. If Frank Buck saw that, not a woman, that.
Yes, I think she sends the wrong message to a lot of young girls that having something like that in your bathing suit that reminds anyone of if you were to peek in a stall, well...
It's like installed at the Hollywood Park.
I was going to say, at Hollywood Park.
All right, so she's been compared to an animal in the jungle.
No, I did not say that. I said what she's carrying in that right there, what she's got in the back of that bathing suit. The rest of her is a lovely girl.
What's the message that she's sending, by the way?
That it's all right to walk around looking like that, even when a man is nearby with a elephant gun or...
All right. Thank you very much, Margaret.
No, it's not thank you very... You blow this. I think it's a very important message to send.
All right, if you're saying that young girls shouldn't gain weight, I understand. But if you're saying that a woman shouldn't look that way because there may be a guy standing around with an elephant gun and may mistake her for, what, a hippo?
No, I was thinking more in terms of the larger of the Serengeti beasts. Now, you go ahead, Phil, and consider that.
Yeah, okay. Girls, if you don't want to be shot at by Frank Buck or any of the guys that came after him, the big game hunters of the world, then make sure you don't have what Kim Kardashian has in her bathing suit.
What?
Her rear end.
Oh, man, I thought you were talking about something. She got something in her bathing suit. What she got in there?
Take a look at what she's got in there.
All right. Anyway, folks, that's all well and good, Margaret, and I hope you're successful with your campaign to educate young women.
It's a very interesting thing. There's a lot of men who don't get it about this kind of... there's a lot of people that don't like Kim Kardashian.
There may be a lot of people that don't like her. They don't like her because they consider her shallow. They consider her and her siblings to be the luckiest people on the face of the earth after Lou Gehrig.
What?
Nothing, man. It was a speech that he gave a long time ago. That they have all this money as the result of the efforts of others. But I will tell you that there's no denying the fact that the Kardashians have taken the money that they have been given, if you will, and they've turned it into more money in a very smart way, I think. They did with it. What else are they going to do? Are they going to go and wait tables?
Well, it might teach them some values.
Well, hold on for a minute. Wait a minute. So you're telling me that this woman should go out and wait tables or something like that and not start a business or not invest her money in creating these large enterprises that she's involved in, whether it's perfume, whether it's clothing, whether it's the TV show. These are efforts that employ many people. She actually starts businesses that employ people that benefit more than just herself and her family, you know.
Well, yeah, but there's no guys going to work on a perfume.
Yeah, they are, man. A lot of guys work on perfume company.
That doesn't just necessarily mean perfume. What are the TV show? There's a lot of guys that work on the TV show. And the same thing with her sister, What's-Her-Face, and the other one, What's-Her-Name.
Yeah, that says it all. What's-Her-Face and What's-Her-Name. Because at the end of the day, only people only care about her. And the reason why they care about her is that large...
Is it large what? The rear end?
There's got to be a word for it. That big...
What's Frank think about her?
What Frank thinks about her is no one's business but mine and Frank's and hers, if she's interested. If you want to know, Kim, I don't know.
Yeah, if you're listening, Kim, call up Margaret.
Yeah, well, she don't like, she don't care about Frank Gray.
I don't know.
Well, if you're listening, Kim, call up and you'll find out what Frank Gray thinks of your ass. Something tells me it's not a bad... God, what are you doing, man?
I'm getting up and go... Are you breaking?
Yes.
I'm going to get the White Owls.
The White Owls they brought into the studio.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I brought Miss Great M and a Dutch Master.
You're not going to puff a White Owl in here, are you?
Why not?
Nothing. All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show to discuss with Dr. Ron Turner and others a little bit of science, because this is the kind of stuff I dig. You know, yeah, sure, we could get into the government defaulting or not defaulting or the government here, there, and everywhere, whatever's happening. But I would much rather be talking about something that is edifying, that is interesting, that is cool, that is... well, maybe we'll get into some of that default stuff. We'll find out. World-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Watch our live streaming video of the show tonight. And don't forget, on Sunday, we got our Game of the Week with the brand-new play-by-play team, which is Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman. We'll be talking to Steve and Ted Bell, who's quit the broadcast team, on the show tonight as well. All right, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and we're online at philhenryshow.com with our live-streaming video, and all of the great radio stations that we are on, as well as the great advertisers that support our show, as well as the great listeners that we have. Everyone's great. Everyone associated with this show, whether an advertiser, whether a radio station, whether a listener, whether the people on the air, we're all great, we're all stellar, we are all Hall of Fame, and will remain that way. All right, Dr. Ron Tarter is going to join us for just a brief segment here on a discovery. I thought I'd just give us a break here tonight, you know, from all of this insane. Every piece of news that we do on this show is important, and I mean that. It's not just about who wants to kill. For instance, this government default thing I think is just interesting as hell. Now all of a sudden I'm reading the Republicans are, oh yeah, this Tea Party, you're right. Even the Republicans are like, you know, are running for cover. And it's everybody on top of the Tea Party, which, you know...
Well, what do you mean by that?
What are you guys looking at?
Well, he said it on top of the Tea Party.
Don't be calling David on this, man, okay?
Well,
Phil, I don't want to have David involved, but when you say they're on top of the Tea Party, you get the image because I've got... Because of you, I've got Kardashian's big butt stuck in my mind. Now you're talking about someone being on top of something. What am I thinking about? I'm thinking of Kardashian's big rear end again, going up...
All right. That's enough of that, okay?
I didn't do it, Phil. I didn't do it.
All right, that's enough of that. I said they're on top of the Tea Party because the Tea Party is getting the blame for it all, and maybe they deserve it. I think they do. I think they deserve a lot of the blame for an asinine 3 weeks of nothing. Just 3 weeks of a guy making a speech. 3 weeks of helping Ted Cruz with his career. That's what you got. 3 weeks of that. Nice going. I think the Tea Party's been co-opted. If ever there were any intelligent people in that group, it was co-opted long ago by Looney Tunes. I mean, just woo! Way out there, baby. All right, Dr. Ron Tarter on the line with us here as we discuss this magnificent... Dr. Tarter, how you doing?
Well, Phil, I'm doing great, and I'm glad I could be a part of helping your audience think or concentrate on something a little bit different tonight.
Skull fossil suggests simpler human lineage. Can you give this to us in English?
Well, I hope that I can, Phil. I'm standing right now, if you'll pardon me, but we're waiting for one of the transit buses here in Denver because I'm having my car worked on, so I am waiting for... some transportation, but we're fine, and we'll continue on here with the discussion, just if you hear some traffic in the background.
We're not having a problem hearing you at all.
Outstanding. Phil, about 8 years ago, there was a 2-million-year-old skull that was found in the Republic of Georgia. The Republic of Georgia. Here comes the crosstown down. I don't know. He didn't stop. That's one of the buses.
What kind of bus is that?
But that sounds almost like is that a subway?
It is one of the light rail. 2 years ago, or I mean 8 years ago, 2 years ago, an 8 million, I forget what I said, Bill, but...
You said that 8 years ago, a 2-million-year-old skull.
Yeah, a 2-million-year-old skull was found in the Republic of Georgia. Now, the skull is remarkably similar to Homo erectus. This is...
Hold on for a minute. Shut up, bud.
You just say it.
Yeah, I'm having said it.
If you guys don't shut up, I'm going to kick you out.
Well, what are they doing? Are they laughing at Homo erectus? I told you that I didn't want to deal with this the last time I was on your program.
No, don't worry about it. If you don't shut up, bud, and you too, Robert.
I just missed my bus again, if anyone's interested.
Dr. Tarter, just continue. Phil's dealing with it.
All right. Homo erectus was the early hominid ancestor of the human being. Now, we feel in the science community, for the longest time we felt, that really there were several different links, if you will, leading to the creature that we've become, Homo sapien. Homo erectus was one, Homo habilis was another, and so on and so forth. We now are beginning to think, and there is a great many that share this theory, that really the human being, the species that we are today, is much, much older than 500,000 years or 50,000 years or whatever it was when human beings eventually came into being. It was around 50,000 years ago.
All right, so 50,000 years ago, you're saying... humans attained what physically we know today as the human skull?
Yes, came into fruition as the species known as the human being. Before that, we had a slightly different ancestor called the Cro-Magnon man and on down the line. But now we feel that, yes, of course we had Cro-Magnon, but we did not have a lot of the others, and we feel now, why isn't he stopping? We got a bus that's not stopping. Well, I'm going to have to ask you. I've got Jim Peabody with me, Phil. You know Jim.
Yeah, I do. Say hello to him.
Phil Henry says hi, Jim. Jim, do you want to go ahead and try and get a bus? Well, I'm just saying, I'm sorry, Phil.
What's going on?
Well, the bus isn't stopping, and I'm wondering if it's you. Jim, I didn't mean. He's walking away.
What do you mean? What did he do?
Well, he didn't do anything, but Jim is a colleague of mine Jim, come on back. Well, he's gone. He's a colleague of mine from the observatory.
Well, why does he have to leave?
I didn't tell him to leave.
Well, what do you mean it's because of him?
Well, we've got buses that are not stopping, and I'm just wondering. Hey, Jim, come on back.
What are you talking about, because he's black?
What's that?
Are you saying that because he's black?
Well, it may be, Robert, yes. And so I told him if he could move to the other side of the platform.
What kind of a comment is that? What kind of a thing is that to say?
I'm shocked.
What do you mean? I'm trying to get a bus, and he's standing here. What are you saying?
Give me a break, will you? Are you telling this man to get to the other side of the platform so a bus will stop for you? And what the hell's wrong with the bus drivers in Denver? Huh?
There may be nothing wrong with them. I'm trying to protect the fact that they're... Phil, I spend most of my time with my eyeballs shoved in a telescope. What are you telling me?
What I'm telling you is that kind of attitude that you just displayed to that colleague of yours, an African-American, saying, could you move to the other side of the platform so one of these buses will stop, is right out of the 1950s. Are you kidding? I mean, everybody here is stunned. You don't even hear Robert or Bud saying anything. They're sitting here with their jaws agape.
Their jaws are what?
Agape.
Ape? See, you're the one...
Agape. G-A-P-E.
Dr. Tarna, this is Margaret. What you said was absolutely unacceptable.
Margaret, give me a break, okay? I'm not gonna be your stepladder to your ride to glory tonight, okay? Stepping all over me.
I am not stepping all over you. I'm saying, as Phil said, the comment you made was absolutely unacceptable.
Where is that gentleman?
Hey, Steve, come on back. Come on back. I'm screwing around, will you?
You're screwing around.
I was just kidding, yeah. Yeah. What? Talk to Phil Henry if you want.
Okay, you know, this is ridiculous. I don't want to talk to him, and I don't want to talk anymore about this. If I hear you one more time, treat people with that kind of disrespect.
What do you care? Do you know the guy?
I care because... Where you been, man? I mean, when you talk about having your eyeballs shoved in a telescope, you ain't kidding.
Phil, my life, my entire life, from the time I get out of bed until the time I go to bed, is my sun and the stars above. The observatory, the stars, the science of man, the planet. I am either reading a book or I am looking through a telescope. I never leave the telescope. And if I don't have the knowledge of modern human behavior, if I don't have knowledge of the modern way that people interact, forgive me, okay? I'm sorry, but I don't I don't pay attention to a lot of things. The last time I checked, a black guy standing next to you on a bus platform bet you're not going to get a bus to stop. You say that things have changed?
Yeah, things have changed. Yes, they've changed.
What are you talking about, Dr. Tarner? We got a black president. You know that, right?
Yes, I know we have a black president, but I wasn't sure of the significance of that until I was explained to me by Bill Cummings, and of course, Steve. I know your name is Steve. I'm just kidding around.
You know, this gentleman that you're standing there with, Mr. What is his name?
His name is Dr. Peabody, not Mr. Peabody, okay? Because he gets the jokes about the Bullwinkle.
The Bullwinkle?
Yeah, Rocky and Bullwinkle, Mr. Peabody.
Oh, okay. We have Dr. Ron Tarner on the line with us here as we discuss the discovery of a 2-million-year-old fossil skull. If I can put this into plain English, Doc, so that we don't keep wasting time with these buses not stopping and you kidding your black colleague there, which I don't think you were kidding.
Well, I was kidding. Well, I wasn't kidding because I didn't... I wasn't kidding because I wasn't sure. I think Steve's a great guy, okay? But I didn't know that telling him to get lost was going to be taken. I didn't know. Now he's walking away again. I didn't know that that was going to be taken so hard, okay? So.
Well, you got to be some kind of, excuse me for saying idiot. You got to be some kind of an idiot.
Well, you know, I don't have to.
Yeah, you do have to, whatever it was he said.
That is amazing, and that's why that man lost that custody battle with his ex. That's why that man leaves his son out overnight in line at a Home Depot so they don't lose their place in line for some new game. Unbelievable.
All right, we're going to come back with Dr. Ron Turner and hopefully get back into the discussion at hand, which is of the evolution of the human race, the evolution of the human species. What the hell happened to us between the time that we were living in caves and clobbering women over the head with our big clubs and, you know, doing all the stupid stuff that cavemen do? What happened between them, those days, and the time we really got stupid now? World famous Phil Hendry Show.
I also don't want
to. We're still in the air.
I don't care. He's a pig.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We have coming up a conversation with Ted Bell and Steve Bozell about how the whole thing went down. The play-by-play team, no longer a team for our game of the week, and some other things that we will be discussing here this evening, including more conversation about the debt ceiling. We also have Harvey Weierman to talk about the Saturday Night Massacre. A lot of you younger people out there don't even know what that is. Harvey will be on to explain it. It has to do with Watergate. It has to do with the resignation of President Nixon. And it was 40 years ago today, as a matter of fact, that the Saturday Night Massacre, as you will find out later on in our program, took place.
What was that?
As you'll find out later on in the program, what it's about, okay?
Yeah, well, the Saturday Night Massacre?
Yeah, the Saturday Night Massacre.
What was that about?
Did you hear what he just said?
I'm going to belt you, man. You know that?
I don't talk about anything.
Hey, but don't start bawling. When you act like a dumbass, you're going to get yelled at, okay? I just got done talking about it, you know, and you weren't listening to me. What were you doing? You were opening up that pack of Lifesavers.
Yeah, because I was trying to get one on account of my breath.
That's fine if your breath is funky, and I appreciate you getting a Lifesaver into your mouth, even though that's not really going to help. You need a mint, okay?
Bud, you need either a Tic Tac or some mints.
Yeah, but a Lifesaver is better.
Yeah, Lifesavers are better.
Lifesavers may taste good, but they're not a breath mint. What the hell am I doing talking to you about this stuff? Anyway, later on, we'll talk about the Saturday Night Massacre. We have on the line with us Dr. Ron Turner, and we're discussing the discovery some 8 years ago of a skull in Georgia, that is, the Republic of Georgia, which now indicates to us that the human being, we come from not that long a line of different species, that in point of fact, our journey up the evolutionary line might have involved just a few different species. The fossil that they found, okay, and this is important, by the way, let me get to...
There's another fossil, Steve. They're not stopping. Why are they not stopping?
Okay, are you going to start talking about that?
No, the only thing I'm saying is Steve Peabody's with me, and I love Steve like a brother. Where are you going? Oh, I love him like a brother. He is black, and he's standing with me, and I can't get a bus or a cab. What do you think the problem is?
Maybe it's you. Maybe they don't want to pick you up. Maybe they want to pick him up, but if you bug off, maybe they'll pick him up and they won't pick you up.
Okay, you're on, smart guy. Get a load of you. Hey, Steve, come on back. Henry thinks there goes another one, see?
Nope.
No cab.
No cab, excuse me.
No cab and no bus is stopping.
All right, then why don't you tell Steve to walk to the other side of the platform? No, you walk to the other side of the platform, okay?
Who's walking to the other side of the platform? No, Steve, not you. Me?
Yes.
Yes, you go to the other side, and then we'll see if he catches a bus.
All right, I'm going to walk over here to get a coffee. There's a coffee machine here. So, anyway, the point, Phil, that was being made here, and I think it's a good point, is the following thing. We have in our possession now a fossil that shows us that while there are many differences between individuals, and this fossilized skull is of the same species as other skulls found in the area, but is very different. Different characteristics, just as human beings are different. Look at this, I'll be a son of a bitch.
What happened? Did he get a cab?
No, he just got a bus.
You're nothing but an idiot.
Yeah, man, I'll serve you right.
How do you feel now?
What do you mean, how do I feel now? Steve, I've got nothing against black people.
No, that's got nothing to do with what you think of black people. He just got a bus. Did he get a bus or a cab?
The bus stopped for him.
Okay, so the bus didn't want to stop for you.
Well, that's impossible. That's impossible. Why would a bus want to stop for me?
What?
Let me blow my nose. Why would the bus want to stop for me?
Because you're a moron. How about that? Because you look like a moron, because you stand there and
thank you very much.
Well, you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, I did know that was going to happen. You want to know something? I'm glad it did happen, because I was tired of talking to him. I want to find out information. I don't want to be talking to him, standing there going, oh, there goes another bus, there goes another cab.
What are you talking about, standing there with a black man? And he's saying that?
Yeah. See, Dr. Tarner is so disconnected from the world, because he's always looking through telescopes, and he's always doing something that has nothing to do with the rest of the world that you and I live in, that he isn't even sure, you know, he doesn't know that we're living in kind of a new day and age, man. It ain't exactly about not picking up a black guy if you're in a bus or a cab. And he was standing, they're in Denver right now, it's an hour ahead, it's 8:30 in the evening, and as soon as he walked away, his colleague got the bus.
Well, I think he said he got a cab.
Whatever. I mean, neither one of them were stopping, and he assumes it's because he's standing there with a black guy. All right, so just to wrap this up...
Do you feel qualified?
Yeah, I'd better call Mr. Hall about it.
Call Mr. Hall about what?
Find out whether you're qualified to comment on it.
Let me tell you something, bud. I'm qualified to comment on it, okay? Don't even worry about it, man. I'm qualified to comment on a news story that I find interesting. Look at this. What did I just tell you not to do?
Look, I want Bud to call me every time that there is a question in terms of programming that may or may not be relevant to the overall success. My mind's on a million different things here, Phil. I'm sorry. What is this about?
Are you over at that restaurant expo?
Yeah, who is it, Margaret?
Yes, I would. Are you at the restaurant expo?
Yes, I am, but that's got nothing to do with what we're talking about right now.
Well, I think you should tell Phil why you're there.
Why are you there?
You know what, Margaret? I hope you die.
I think you can wish all you want about me. I think you should tell Phil why you're there.
I'm here because we're trying to find a deep fryer for donuts.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. Go ahead, baby. She picked one out.
You're at the restaurant expo to pick up a deep fryer for donuts for the fiancé?
Yes. All right. If it's any business of yours.
Guess what, man? It's none of my business, but something else that's none of your business is this show. You calling in. So go ahead. What do you want?
All I'm asking for, are you qualified to talk about the skull of some ape man or whatever it is?
I'm qualified to give an opinion like any talk show host in the history of the planet Earth that's ever been on the radio. I can give a dumb opinion, a smart opinion. I can give an opinion that's full of crap. I can give an opinion that's right down the line smart. I can give an academic one. I can give one from the barroom. I can give all kinds of opinions. I can read a news story and give an opinion, because that's what talk radio is, a whole bunch of dumbasses and a few smart guys. How's that feel?
Well, I hope you die, because...
Boy, that's about the... how many people are going to say that tonight?
That's David saying that because he just saw Tombstone.
Yeah, he saw Tombstone where Ike Clanton says it.
Oh, yeah, Ike Clanton says that to who? The,
They said it to Earp. As soon as Earp goes out, I hope you die.
Well, no, he doesn't. He says, I hope they die, but,
No, he says, I hope you die. You don't remember that?
Okay, well, whatever. So he just saw Tombstone and now he's using that phrase?
Yeah, it took like a good phrase to use.
What a weird show, man. What weird people I know. You know that?
Well, that's a fine how do you do.
No, I'm sorry. I don't mean it, but just weird people. Why don't I get to know normal people? Why do I got to know you guys?
What makes you think you're all that normal?
Yeah, good one. Hey, yeah.
Don't high-five him. What do you mean, what makes me think I'm all that normal? I'm trying to hold together a radio show, and you guys are off in 58 different directions.
You asked a question as to why he said, I hope you die. He had just seen Tombstone.
Well, I'm talking about him in that instance being weird. In any event, skull fossils suggest simpler human lineage. Now then, one of the things that I think needs to be, and this is really kind of up my alley, folks. It's not up my alley, but I do find it very interesting. Now, one of the things when we talk about the lineage of... Don't play the crickets, okay?
That's what Mr. Hall said.
Mr. Hall said, well, guess what? Mr. Hall doesn't get to say, okay? You're not playing...
Phil, this is something that is probably needed. The audience needs to understand that you are not a college professor.
I'm not claiming to be a college professor. I'm simply looking at this. I've done a little bit of reading, and I think I have the right to say the thing. It would be a simpler story if fewer ancestral species, early diverse fossils.
What are you going to do, hit me? Mr. Hall said you can't, and think. Where'd you get that?
I got my own cricket.
Yeah, well, that's not fair to you have your cricket.
I got my own crickets. Now, in the early days, the Homo sapien, which had come...
Yeah, see, I told you, because it... Shut up!
No, I'm going to play my crickets when you talk. Because every time you talk...
Yeah, see, I played the cricket...
Get out of here with that, will you?
You guys really need help, both of you. You really need help. You need a good, strong neurotransmitter, maybe epinephrine, and you need electroshock.
Yeah, well, you know something? Don't ever play crickets. I don't care if Bud, Dr. Hall or whoever, you know what?
His name's David Hall, not Bud Hall. God, what a freakoid. You know, some of the things that you say on this show... Cut it out!
Sit down. Anyway, folks... We'll continue this discussion on what kind of skull was found in Georgia, that is, the one in Russia, later on in the program. Coming up next is Harvey Wireman to tell us about the Saturday Night Massacre. Did you know what the Saturday Night Massacre was? Are you familiar with the Saturday Night Massacre? Do you care what the Saturday Night Massacre is? I don't know. But we will be talking with Harvey Wireman about that in a few minutes because it's anniversary. Fell on this here day, and it happened in Washington D.C. back in the days of President Nixon. You know,
President Nixon got fired, man.
President Nixon quit ahead of getting fired. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. All right, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com as well. Get a backstage pass over at philhenryshow.com and watch and listen and enjoy. And also enjoy some of the extracurricular... The extra stuff that we have. Tonight, in fact, after the show, we're going to be airing Night of the Living Dead.
What?
We're going to be airing Night of the Living Dead on Phil TV.
Why wasn't I told about this?
Well, let's see.
Because it says freaks.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, you're right. Freaks.
Thank God. I've got everyone tuning in with their BSPs to see Freaks, and you say Night of the Living Dead. That gave me a little bit of a start.
All right. Well, I apologize. Yeah, it's Freaks. The great Todd Browning masterpiece will be on Phil TV tonight around 10:30 Pacific. Just kind of our build-up to the whole Halloween thing.
I'm not... The Night of the Living Dead is all well and good, but the zombie thing... It's so over. I'm sick and tired of it.
What are you talking about? Zion the Zombies is great.
Yeah, I've been like Walking Dead.
I'm so sick and tired of hearing about Walking Dead that I could gut... Never mind.
Well, what are you worried about?
You know, I used to work for AMC, and I remember when it was a respectable channel, and they had the very lovely... I say lovely. They had the very handsome... Nick Clooney did the films. Do you remember that, Phil, when AMC had Nick Clooney, Robert Osborne... And they introduced the very lovely movies?
Well, I remember when AMC was introducing the, quote, very lovely movies.
What does that mean, quote, waving your fingers like that?
Because AMC sucked, that's why. And there's no other way of putting it. AMC did not, either they didn't have the catalog or the library that TCM has. For TCM's got an amazing library. TCM's got a fantastic library. And TCM finds a way... to air the films, and you don't have to look at commercials. AMC was losing money hand over fist, as far as I know. I don't know who owned them, but whoever owned them wasn't doing a very good job with them, and they wound up having to stick commercials in the middle of the movie. It was terrible. It was a terrible channel.
You know, you don't even know what you're talking about.
I know what I'm talking about. And so AMC finally, in a last-ditch desperate bid to have something on that was worthy of watching... They began to, they commissioned original programs, and they've done very, very well. And this Walking Dead is an example of that. All right. So anyway, after the show, we're going to see Freaks right here on Phil TV if you want to watch that. Now, 40 years ago today was something called the Saturday Night Massacre. To tell us more about the Saturday Night Massacre, Harvey Wireman is standing by. But just to give you a little bit of a buildup, the preceding years, well, actually it was 73, so for a full year and maybe a half, a year and 4 or 5 months, the country was increasingly becoming aware of something called this Watergate burglary. It happened in June of 1972. It happened just prior to Richard Nixon being elected to a second term. It happened while we were very strenuously engaged in trying to find a way out of Vietnam, and we had pretty much done that. I think it was in January of 73 that we signed a terms with the North Vietnamese that would see American troops leaving Vietnam after a long, long, bloody war. We were commencing the 70s and an economic reality in this country that was very, very difficult to deal with. We were going to be going into recession after recession. We were going to see all kinds of urban problems popping up and so forth. Now, in the middle of all of that comes Watergate, this burglary. What?
Gotta pick it up.
Don't give me that windmill pick it up thing, okay?
Well, Phil, we've only got...
All right, let me get Harvey Wireman. You know, I can't stand that when you guys do that with a little windmilling hand, like, let's go. This isn't television, all right?
Well, I know that, and Phil, I love listening to you, but I think we want to hear from Harvey and the different things that he may have to say. You know what I'm saying, right?
No, I don't know what you're saying, but that's okay. It's, you know, Rude is our middle name around here.
Rude? You were the one that was talking, well...
No, it was your friend, Mr. Turner, who was talking about having a black colleague that wouldn't let him get a cab.
My friend, Mr. Turner.
You're the one that introduced him to us. Anyway, from his home in San Marino is Harvey Wireman, attorney at law, longtime defense attorney, as well as did a lot of pro bono with the ACLU. I don't think it's any secret, Harvey, that you were a political, not political, but philosophical opponent of Richard Nixon during those years, correct?
Well, that's absolutely correct, and I still am a philosophical opponent to the that kind of imperial hubris that Nixon, did. But I will say that time is, you know, mellows things, and I understand that Richard Nixon was caught up in, if he'd just have been honest originally about that break-in, he would have been way better off, but instead he wanted to cover up, and that was the end of that.
And a lot of people saying that Nixon covered up because he was just paranoid of the political opposition?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. He was Nixon was a good guy behind the scenes. I met him, and he was a good man. I threw a few drinks back with Richard Nixon, and he could tell a great story, and he even did impressions, and which were hysterical, you know.
What kind of impressions?
Oh, he would did. Nixon did the Sam Ervin. Everybody on the Watergate committee, Richard Nixon could do a dead-on impersonation of him.
You're kidding. And you sat and listened to Richard Nixon doing this?
Yeah, we had dinner. I was invited to dinner a couple of times. And then another time we were having drinks, and he broke into a Sam Ervin that I thought I was going to strangle. It was so funny.
Well, how did you get along with the president being politically opposed, philosophically opposed to him?
Well, I didn't see him that much. I was only there for a couple of as counsel on a couple of matters that were being dealt with that had nothing to do with Watergate, but I didn't know the guy. He got himself involved in the Watergate massacre and the Saturday Night on Saturday Night Live, and for
you mean the Saturday Night Massacre?
The Saturday Night Massacre, which was would happen at Watergate.
Well, the Saturday Night Massacre didn't happen at Watergate. It happened a year and some months after that. The Saturday Night Massacre we're talking about?
The Saturday Night Massacre happened when everyone got arrested, I thought, for the Watergate break-in.
No, we're talking about William Richardson.
I didn't know they called that the Saturday Night Massacre. That way, okay. Well, what happened on that night was that Archibald Cox was a special counsel that had been appointed. had been a protodated. Oh, shoot, I can't read my own writing here.
Here we go again, man.
Not here we go again.
Well, can I help you out?
Help me out with what?
Telling people what it is you're talking about?
Yeah, go ahead, Phil. I'm so old and feeble, I can't say it.
Harvey, no one's saying that, but you're having a difficult time understanding...
You do me a favor, will you, Margaret? Butt out. Would you just butt out? Okay?
Harvey, you are talking to the wife of Frank Gray.
Yeah, but I'm bigger than Frank Gray, okay? I've been around a lot longer than Frank T.C. Gray. You know, that guy's a running gag down at the Jonathan Club. You know that, right? So let me just do it the way I want to do it. Elliot Richardson was president of the United States.
Elliot Richardson, huh? It was Richard Nixon.
I mean, Richard Nixon was president of the United States. Archibald Cox, which sounds like a cartoon character. To this day, I can't even believe that's a real guy. But Archibald Cox was something. He was important. I forget what he did.
He was the special... Okay, we got to take a break. I got a minute to go here.
What?
Well, I got one guy who... What? I got one guy who is having a problem with their... I don't know what you would call it. There's one guy who's having a problem with figuring out whether the bus is going to stop because of him or because of his black friend. I got another guy so old, he can't remember what Saturday Night Massacre is, Saturday Night Live is, Watergate Massacre. Get it together, will you? Somebody, whoever is handling these guests. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And don't forget, after the show tonight, we got Freaks on Phil TV. Coming up on Sunday, we have the Game of the Week. Game of the Week on Phil TV in HD, man. And now, the game is not on TV. You're going to hear the radio call. What's on TV or what, bud?
Got a lot of pictures of stuff.
A lot of pictures of stuff. Anyway, we'll also be talking to Steve Bozell and Ted Bell about that. Here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Margaret Gray with us here. Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman on the line now will be, I hope, not too contentious a debate. It's not even really, I don't really want it to be a debate so much as a discussion from two different political sides about the Saturday Night Massacre, which was, and I do thank Harvey Weierman for attempting the description. You know, Margaret.
Well, he's an elderly man. He was very tired.
Yeah, you sound like he's going to fall out.
Well, don't say too much because he's liable to call back. And then that will be, you know, a whole other level of pain. We do have with us from Charleston, West Virginia, of course, Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton there. They are at Roses across from the state capitol there where they usually hold forth after a late night session. Doing the business of the people of West Virginia. They're both, I would say, on the liberal side or the progressive side of the political divide, big supporters of President Obama. Here in Southern California is Vernon Dozier from Glendale, California, very much a conservative. He's also a teacher. He is a member of the board there at Belmar, their varsity football coach, social sciences, senior class advisor, all kinds of things. Good to have you guys with us. Kurt and Guy, how are things there in West Virginia tonight?
Very good, and very proud to be with you.
And is that you, Guy?
Yeah, right here, Bill.
All right, and Vernon Dozier joining us from Glendale. Vernon, how are you?
I'm very grateful you gave me a call here tonight. This is a big topic in our class.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. You're a high school teacher, a high school social sciences and history teacher. Did you cover this at all this week?
Yeah, Bill. We talked about the Saturday Night Massacre, and we discussed the events leading up to it. We also discussed who the principals were involved in the so-called Saturday Night Massacre. This was a, if I may, Phil.
Go ahead, please.
I think that's a good idea to have Mr. Dozier do it. He's a high school teacher, you know.
I heard that point with all due respect to Mr. Weierman. I heard his attempt at it.
Well, Harvey, the only reason why we brought him on is he'd been there through some of those events, but you're right. It was maybe a little bit too much for him. So go ahead.
The Saturday Night Massacre was the firing or the resignation, depending upon how you see these things, of the Attorney General for the United States and the Attorney General's assistant. And the Attorney General was Elliot Richardson. The Assistant Attorney General was William Ruckelshaus. Now, Now, the reason why these men were fired or resigned, depending upon what you want to say about this, is because they had been, or at least Elliot Richardson had been directed by President Nixon to dismiss a special prosecutor that had been appointed by the President of the United States, Archibald Cox. Archibald Cox would be the special prosecutor looking into the events of Watergate. And I don't know if the other gentleman here...
Well, I can kind of pick that up a little bit here, Phil, just by way of everything there that Mr. Doja said is correct. You going to say something, guys?
Yeah. I'll talk about Elliot Richardson.
Now, he already talked about Elliot Richardson. And what happened was the following thing. Archibald Cox was appointed special prosecutor because it was essentially the executive branch of the government investigating itself. You understand what I'm saying? So you have a man that has been appointed by President Nixon going to try to investigate President Nixon. Well, that just won't do. You see what I'm saying?
Well, now let me ask you a question. Who appointed Archibald Cox?
If I could jump in, I think I misspoke. I don't think it was the president. I think Archibald Cox was selected by the Attorney General, was it?
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Vernon. The Attorney General of the United States of America at that time, Elliot Richardson, I think he picked Archibald Cox. And the law that created the Office of the Special Prosecutor, the law, and Guy Barton, you have a little information on this.
Yeah, the law that created this man. Understand?
The law didn't create the man. The law created
a... The law didn't create the man. The law created the Office of Special Prosecutor. It said you cannot dismiss a special prosecutor except under certain circumstance. There had to be malfeasance, you know, and everything like that. So.
So that's a very interesting thing to know. So the law said, in creating this Office of Special Prosecutor, the law said the only way you could fire him is if he was guilty of some major problem.
That's it exactly, and certainly he was not fired for that reason. Archibald Cox had demanded of the President of the United States the tapes. Now, these tapes that the President of the United States had was tapes that was in the White House, you know.
Let me just jump in here. This is Vernon Dozier. I noticed that you're letting him talk more. I don't mean to say anything to you, sir.
I didn't hear you saying anything, so...
Well, I'm going to say something right now. The law said that Mr. Queedy is right. The law said you couldn't fire the special prosecutor except for very special reasons, and President Nixon decided to fire Archibald Cox because he had requested tapes that were the president's tapes. These are tapes that have been made in the Oval Office. They were tapes of private conversations, conversations having to do with national security and national interest. And the existence of these tapes came to be known during the Watergate hearings. Alexander Butterfield.
This guy, Alexander Butterfield's name came up early on in the Watergate hearings as the man who... What was he?
I think Alexander Butterfield was a... I don't know. Do you have any idea on that, Mr. Queedy?
Alexander Butterfield was, I think he was an assistant to the, might have been assistant to the general counsel for the president. He might have been John Dean's assistant. Of course, there were all the jokes about Butterfield and whether or not he played harmonica, but...
Those were not very prevalent jokes because no one to this day really knows who Paul Butterfield is, as much as I wish they did.
Well, I second that, sir. I send kudos, sir. And I tip my hat to you, and I raise my glass to you on that one, sir.
Thank you very much.
By the way, so far this has been a very polite conversation. I appreciate it.
Well, I can tell you, Mr. Hendry, it's taken a great deal of... I'm happy it is, too, Phil, but it's taken a great deal of control on my part.
Why is that, sir?
See, please don't ask me why. It's taken a great deal of control.
No, but I think it helps people understand how they can better get along with each other. You say it's taking a lot of control. Am I irritating you something like that?
Yeah, you are. You're irritating the hell out of me with the whole...
Why is he irritating you?
The whole, hey, y'all, going along there. I got to tell you.
Well, sir, if I'm not mistaken, you sound like you have a southern accent, too. Where are you from?
I come from Texas, all right? I don't come from Louisiana or any...
I didn't say I come from Louisiana, although, yeah, I'm originally raised in Louisiana. I come up here in West Virginia.
You got a problem with that? I hope not.
What's the problem with that? And let me ask you something. What are you supposed to be? Some Gabby Hayes? No, sir. I'm a member of the West Virginia State Legislature. Mr. Ed, I don't need to be insulted by this man.
All right. Just as soon as I said that you guys were getting along great, now all of a sudden we're having an argument. Mr. Dozier, please, if you're getting along with these guys and you're able to stuff whatever your antagonism is, that's great. Let's just do that, okay? Do you mind? I would appreciate it.
I'm Phil. I'm here to help, all right? I'm here to help.
And, Phil, I want to second that. That's all I want to do on this here, too, you know? I'm here to help. I'm here to see that everything is smooth as buttermilk here. You know, I don't want to say nothing or do nothing. They're going to upset the apple cart here. Or even if we're bobbing for apples, I wouldn't want to say that, you know?
Vernon, just take it easy. We're going to return here as we listen to Vernon Dozier as well as Kurt Quady talk about the Saturday Night Massacre. This is the 40th anniversary tonight of an event that occurred in American history relative to the office of the president, relative to the balance of power between the executive and the legislative, as well as the judicial, relative to what would eventually become the very first resignation of an American president, resulting from all of these events, Watergate, and then the investigation of Watergate, and eventually the threat of impeachment to a sitting president. It would have been the first impeachment proceedings to be commenced against the president since Andrew Johnson. It never happened. Nixon resigned. So we're going to be back and talk more about that here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with our guests Vernon Dozier and along with Guy Barton and Kurt Quady from West Virginia. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. Online at philhenryshow.com. Visit our souvenir shop and pick up this Phil Henry ball cap. Welcome to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Welcome back, I should say. We're talking to Vernon Dozier, Guy Barton, and Kurt Quady about the Saturday Night Massacre. It's an important topic, I think, because it was, as I say, it was probably one of the most pivotal moments in the political history of America with a special prosecutor who had been, and this was the first special prosecutor in the history of the country, I believe, Archibald Cox. This man was appointed by the Justice Department. So he was appointed by the Justice Department to look into the Watergate burglary. They didn't want the Justice Department to do it because they felt it was a conflict of interest. They were investigating their own branch of the government. A special prosecutor, somebody who I think was actually selected by the Congress, forgive me, I think, a special prosecutor had a specific scope. The specific duties of his office were outlined, and there were very specific reasons that one could fire him or replace him. But those had to be adhered to, and anything that went beyond that was literally a violation of the law. What happened was Archibald Cox decided that what he needed were these tapes that the Nixon White House had in the Oval Office. He subpoenaed them. Nixon was foot dragging on giving these tapes over. He had sent over copies that had been liberally edited, a lot of sections deleted. Cox again submitted this request, another subpoena, and finally Nixon, I guess, had enough of Archibald Cox and directed the Attorney General, which was at that time Elliot Richardson, to fire him, and Elliot Richardson refused, saying, and some people say rightfully so, that the reasons Nixon was giving the Attorney General to fire Archibald Cox were not legal. You couldn't fire him for the reasons that Nixon was saying. So with that in mind, I return to our guests, Vernon Dozier, a social sciences and history teacher at Belmar Academy, and, of course, Kurt Quady and Guy Barton in West Virginia. So, Vernon, you're, like I say, probably more prone to forgive President Nixon and to look on that time in history as one in which the Congress overstepped itself. What do you think of what I just described? Anything wrong with that?
Well, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with what you, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, do you disagree when he was fired, when Elliot Richardson was told to fire Archibald Cox and he refused, do you disagree that Richardson had good reason?
Richardson had good reason to resign.
Or to refuse.
Well, I mean, Elliot Richardson was directed by the President of the United States of America. The President of the United States of America. I don't know about you, but I have great respect for that office, and I hope and pray that as I get older, I will see respect for that office return. I'm not talking about the politics of the man. I respect the office of the presidency, whether it's Barack Obama, whether it's George Bush. That's the office of the president. When the president says something, buddy, you better sit up and take notice. Because if you don't, I mean, I think that anyone that ignores a president or tells a president to go ahead and stick, I can't stand some of these guys that show disrespect to the president of the United States. To do that, I think I can't even begin to tell you what I think about and what I'd like to do to somebody that, done did that.
Can I jump in here, Phil?
Go ahead.
I want to concur here with Vernon to a point. I respect the President of the United States. There's nobody that respects the President of the United States more than me. No matter who, we talk about the office of the President of the United States.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right. And I respect that, too, but I have to disagree.
Well, I didn't give an opinion yet.
Oh, okay. Well, what do you do? Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I would rather Phil ask me that question. You're not the host of the show.
All right. Well, okay. I'm going to go ahead and give my opinion. I'm glad that they resigned.
I'm still making my comments. What's going on here? I'm still making my comments.
All right. Well, he jumped in with a question, and he made an assumption, I guess, that was wrong. But nonetheless, it was a question that you wanted to ask. Isn't that right, Kurt?
Yeah, I was going to ask Vernon. I said, well, why do you agree with the fact that that Archibald Cox ought to be fired? And you don't agree with that?
No, I agree with the fact that Archibald Cox should be fired, but I hadn't said it yet, and you're telling me what I was going to say. I just, it's not...
All right. Why don't you go ahead and just stop where you are right now, Kurt, and let Vernon finish his thoughts, okay?
Yeah, okay. I didn't mean to.
What did he do?
He told me I got to wait for this man to finish.
All right, well, you don't have to talk about me like I'm not here, okay? I mean...
No, nobody's doing that. Gentlemen, just let's like I said, let's move forward. We were doing very well, okay?
We were doing very well. Look, Phil, I'm not on the program here to give a manners exhibition. This isn't the Emily Post Hour. Okay, and...
Well, I don't think it is either, sir.
I just wanted you gentlemen to understand that. I mean, I respect your opinion, but I'm not going to sit here and be slapped across the face with someone's wet jockstrap, like they used to do in high school. I'm just saying that.
No, nobody's doing that, sir. I don't think so. I'm just saying that I had opinion, but I thought you don't respect opinion,
All right, no one is trying to disrespect you, Vernon, I don't think, and if you've perceived some disrespect, then let me apologize. And I'd hope that we can move on.
Well, that's fine. I just, I don't think anybody has yet, but I don't want to be sat down and told, hey, Frosh, see this? It's a jockstrap we pulled out of the bottom of the crud bin, and you're going to wear it, and then we're going to soak it and slap you in the... You see what I'm saying?
Look, Mr. Doja, that sounded to me like you're coming up with some all kind of crazy talk from when you were a coach,
No, this is not crazy talk when I was a coach. I'm just asking to have respect.
People are respecting you, Vernon. No, nobody's disrespecting you, and nobody's slapping you across the face with a wet jockstrap. So can we continue?
Yeah, we can. Can I ask, what's all that noise? It sounds like you're in the middle of some...
We're over at a restaurant called Rose's. We're having ourselves a cobbler,
I'm sorry?
I said we're over at Rose's and have the cobbler.
Yeah, what we're doing, we have a double gobble. Rose is a very, very well-built young lady. She come over with a gobble. And we all over that like white on rice. That's all I'm trying to say. But I'm certainly not trying to disrespect anything like that. Are you guys telling me that you're at a restaurant where there's a waitress with large breasts and she's doing what?
She's serving up a cobble.
She's serving up a what?
Cobble? What is a cobble?
I don't know how many times I've been on your program. I told you all about it.
No, you told me all about a peach cobbler. Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. It's a peach cobbler, right?
Yeah, peach cobbler, Phil. I'm out there beside.
Okay, it's a peach cobbler. Are we all done talking about peach cobblers? Are we ready to get back to the topic?
I know I am, Phil.
Go ahead.
The, God. I forget where we were.
Can I take over, Phil?
No, I don't want him to take over. I want to remember where we were. If Mr. Henry, if you could help me.
Yeah, we were talking about the firing of Archibald Cox. Was it right or was it wrong? Let me just ask this. Do you think the firing of Archibald Cox was warranted?
I absolutely do think it was warranted, Phil, because Archibald Cox had overstepped his bounds by going up to Nixon and basically sticking a finger in his chest and saying, "Hey, you, I want those tapes." And, you know, I think that that was wrong.
Phil, no, nobody stuck a finger...
Excuse me, but I'm not finished yet.
Yeah, let Vernon finish.
I think it was wrong to knock on the White House door like your car just broke down, but in point of fact, you've got a friend hiding in the bushes, and the minute she opens the door, guess what? Clockwork Orange. And I think we all saw the film. And I think that that's what Archibald Cox had in mind for Nixon. And I got to tell you, I fear for our country when we have a special prosecutor that wants to pop through the front door of the White House with a big long nose, a derby hat, and disrespect the office of the president by kicking him in the... And you saw what happened. And
what is Pat Nixon, the lady that they threw... You know, this is some crazy talk here, Vernon, okay?
No, it's not crazy. This is, I'm talking in a figurative sense.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been to two World Fairs and a 4th of July picnic. That's the weirdest thing I ever heard in my life. And
this gentleman here with the whole talking like this, would you please just allow me to finish... Just finish.
All right, you'll finish here on the other side of our break. We have to take a break. This is some bizarre jazz, man. What I'm hearing here, and I anticipate what we're gonna hear here over the next half hour is pretty strange, Margaret.
Well, I don't think that Vernon Dozier should be talking about. I thought it was absolutely out of bounds of him to talk about the firing of Archibald Cox or the demanding of those tapes. Like the scene in Clockwork Orange where the kid with the big nose, I mean, see, one of the things about that scene, Phil, the woman in that scene reminds me so much of myself because I look so very much like her, and I do have...
You do have what?
You didn't say that men are all like, ooh, for you.
You know, if it mattered at all to me, Bud, your life would be over right now. It really would.
All right, hold on for a minute. We're going to be talking about this as we move into the next half hour. Vernon Dozier is with us, along with Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton. The 40th anniversary of the Saturday Night Massacre, a major, major event in the history of this country, in the history of the Watergate period, when the Attorney General of the United States, as well as his assistant, resigned rather than fire the special prosecutor, and they incurred the wrath of the president. World famous Phil Henry Show. World famous Phil Henry Show, and you might have seen on the screen there momentarily, I'll put it back for you, Vernon Dozier requested this clip. I know, Margaret, that you don't like it.
I think it is absolutely vile. I think the clip, I think the film was brilliant, but to show this... Even on your subscription service.
All right, let's get the gentleman back up here, Vernon Dozier, as well as Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton. Vernon, you're looking at the clip that you requested. This is from Clockwork Orange, and it shows Malcolm McDowell's character, as well as the other members of this hoodlum gang that he was a member of, that he was the leader of, breaking into and attacking a man and woman in their home in the middle of the night, holding the woman while the husband is being repeatedly kicked. You're telling me that this is symbolic of what happened to Nixon.
I am telling Phil, as much as I hate to do this, as much as I hate to say this, that is exactly...
I'm telling you right now, that's the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my life.
Excuse me, gentlemen, may I finish what I'm saying?
You can finish what you're saying, sir. You want to finish this slander, I think. What you're saying is a slander against Archibald Cox, and Special Prosecutor slander. And
all right, while you're being redundant and repetitive with the slander and talking like you just got off a bass boat in Baton Rouge, I'm talking about the future of my country.
I'm talking about my country, too, sir, and I think what you're talking... Look at this. Over and over, he's kicking... So you're trying to tell me that Malcolm McDowell's laying a boot right into Richard Nixon and kicking his groin in, and that's fine. You can say that all you want. Don't make it true.
Let me tell you, Mr. Henry, I said at the outset of my comments that what the existence of Archibald Cox, one of the things I think you have to understand, I come from a football mentality. Archibald Cox, his name and everything that he is at that time, and it has grown in import since, represents some guy named Archie who's going to come into my house, pick my wife up, spank her on the rear end, and have at it, and kick me, and I'm laying there watching.
Well, sir, it sounded to me like you take things...
Excuse me, can I talk to the host of the show?
Well, I don't sound like the host of the show is there.
No, I'm right here. I've been listening to you guys, and if you want me to respond to you, Vernon, I will.
I'd like to know what you think of what happened to the President of the United States in 1970. President Nixon forced to resign in 1974 while he was forced to resign while this is going on. While Archibald Cox has got on a... I'm not saying literally, obviously, but I'm saying that Archibald Cox, in a figurative and symbolic sense, had on a big long nose, and...
Y'all get out of here, man. Will you get out of here before we send for the man with the butterfly net? We're going to get a guy in a little white wagon on you.
Now, hold on. You're saying that hold on for a second, Kurt. You're saying that Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor who is appointed by the Congress to look into the Watergate situation, basically invaded the White House like Malcolm McDowell's gang did that home in Clockwork Orange.
I'm telling you more than that. I'm saying he had on a big nose with... I'm not saying literally, but I'm saying the act that Archibald Cox was involved in, the very requesting of private materials that are owned by the President of the United States, he might as well have put on a cod piece, a derby hat, a walking stick, and slapped... I God forgive me for saying this, and slap Pat Nixon right on the end. That's the part that bothers me.
I didn't hear that last part, so you speak up.
You know what? I've got more respect for the First Lady than to
say it loud. You say it under your breath. See, that's what I find disingenuous, sir.
All right, slap Pat. Slap Pat.
Slap Pat Nixon on the ass? Is that what you said?
You ought to be ashamed of yourself, sir. You really ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Wait a minute. I'm not the guy.
No, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. See, she was the First Lady of our country. I'm a progressive telling you that, you know?
That's bothered me bad there, you know. Hey, would you please tell Chatterbox there to either speak English or... let me tell you something, my man. I have been in politics a lot longer than you've probably been alive, and I know all about what happened to Watergate. And I can tell you, as disrespectful you might think of what the President of the United States, nobody put on a big long nose and slap anybody on the ass. Nobody put on a jock strap with a big boot and going in wearing a funny looking hat. That was not the case. Because if that was the case, I can assure you I would not have supported that.
No, I would not support anything as disrespectful as that.
Let me tell you something. That's exactly what happened.
All right. That's a fairly concise series of comments, gentlemen. All right, I'm going to get it off. We've had this on the screen. That's a fairly concise. So essentially what you're saying here, Vernon, is that not only was not legal, you don't think it was a legal act for them to appoint this special prosecutor, or at least for him to make the request that he made. You find it an insult to the very office of the president, and you've had me look online and put on the screen Malcolm McDowell in Clockwork Orange kicking this writer in... You know.
Let's say he's kicking the writer right in the testing room.
Hey, you know something, man? I can't hear.
Hey, I'll tell you something, man. What can I do for you, man?
I can't hear what you're saying.
I said Malcolm McDowell is kicking that writer in the tent. Are you guys kicking the what?
I think he said the testicle.
Like, let's not whisper things on this show. I've got a problem with that with one of my co-hosts. I don't want that with my guests. You don't need to say he's kicking the man straight in the gut is what it looks like to me. And that I do not agree was done to Richard Nixon. All right,
Mr. Henry, you brought me on the program here to tell you what's up. All right, now you're going to turn around and say, "Well, thank you for telling me what's up." But now, why don't you sit down and let me tell you what's up?
Let me tell you what I think, if you don't mind. If you don't mind.
Oh,
well, excuse me.
Phil, don't get pouty. Just go ahead.
Archibald Cox, the Office of the Special Prosecutor, was created to look into the Watergate because the Congress rightfully recognized how can the executive investigate itself. The Attorney General of the United States respected the formation of this office. There were very specific and very, very concise guidelines as to how you might effect the removal of a special prosecutor. And one of them was not, well, he's asking me for stuff that I don't think I should give him. That was not one of them. If he subpoenas the President of the United States with a legal subpoena for materials relevant to a case, the President had to turn it over. The President fired him. The President didn't fire him, but the President directed Elliot Richardson to fire him. And Elliot Richardson, rightfully so, because he knew what the law stated that had created the Office of the Special Prosecutor. The law said, you can't fire this man for just any reason. So Richardson refused. The President was giving him an unlawful order. He was telling him to fire this man, and there was no legal cause to do it. So Nixon says he fired Elliot Richardson. Elliot Richardson says he quit. The next in line was William Ruckelshaus. He was the assistant attorney general. And Nixon said to him, okay, now you fire Archibald Cox. Archibald Cox, you know, was the special prosecutor. He wanted Ruckelshaus to fire him. Ruckelshaus said the same thing Richardson said. I can't do it, Mr. President. The guy is legally, he's given you a legal subpoena. I'm not going to fire him. So, again, Nixon either fired him or Ruckelshaus quit. As I remember it happening, both men resigned. That's how I remembered it.
Well, you know, so until you were a young, you know, anti-establishment, excuse me for saying this, Bill, a punk.
Well, hold on, I'm not done yet. All right, I'm not done yet.
Well, you call a man a punk, you know, what were you back then?
I had a little bit of respect, a little tiny. I wasn't going to go into a guy's house wearing these steel-toed boots and start laying into him while his old lady is throwing over some big fat slob's shoulder. I wasn't going to do that.
What is it with you in this movie, Clockwork Orange, man? You're seeing all life through it that way?
What? What did you just say?
What is it with you comparing everything to Clockwork Orange?
I didn't compare everything to Clockwork Orange. I said Archibald Cox giving Nixon a subpoena for the tapes was like Malcolm McDowell going into that writer's house and kicking him in.
I don't want to say the word, but I'll say I heard what he said. He said nudge. You know.
Hey, let me tell you something. I did not say nuts. If you want to know, I said nuts. Okay?
All right, fine. You said nuts. You know, you make fun of my accent.
No, but forget that. I'm not finished yet. Finally, Ruckelshaus quits. That leaves a man by the name of Robert Bork. Some of you may remember the name Robert Bork because he was up for a nomination to the Supreme Court of the United States under Ronald Reagan. Robert Bork then did fire Archibald Cox, I should say, after the resignation of Richardson and Ruckelshaus. Robert Bork became the acting attorney general, and he did fire Archibald Cox. This was illegal, and this precipitated a massive, sort of a public opinion revolt against President Nixon. Up until that point, Nixon had, I would say, the country was. You know, divided, maybe not evenly, but Nixon had a pretty good, solid base of support. After the Saturday Night Massacre, public opinion really started to turn against him. People were saying, now, wait a minute, what's he... They just went through this big rigmarole about having a special prosecutor, and all of a sudden this cat is firing this guy? And, you know, so it was very strange. It was very strange.
Well, and the other thing, Phil, is they went ahead after they fired Cox, they hired a new one. I mean, I wish Nixon would have stuck to his guns and said, you know what, you can kiss it, and you can kiss it on Main Street when the sun is high in the sky, because I'm not going to have another one of these special prosecutors. The one you appointed came into the White House, yes, threw the First Lady over his shoulder.
All right, enough of the Clockwork Orange comparisons, man. I'm done with that. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. We're going to be right back here to wrap up our interesting little look back on... The Saturday Night Massacre, 40 years ago today. Phil Henry Show. World famous Phil Henry Show here with Vernon Dozier and Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton from West Virginia talking about the Saturday Night Massacre. And, of course, we'll take some phone calls from you as well at 855-500-7445. So we have the Saturday Night Massacre, even to this day, a disagreement as to the legality of it, but I would have to say, overall, Vernon, I'm sorry to disagree. Overall, it was an outrageous act. And the reason why I say that is the acting attorney general, Robert Bork, was then had to appoint another special counsel because it was called for by law, and Leon Jaworski wasn't much different from Archibald Cox.
Well, you know, I don't care whether or not this guy Borsi Bork, that was another problem. Bork was a solicitor general. I thought Bork was a... I don't think... You know, there's a scene, Phil, in The Wild Bunch where Robert Ryan is looking up toward William Holden and his gang. Robert Ryan's chasing them. He is a member of the law enforcement, and he's chasing them. And yet he says to the men that are with him, I'd rather be with those men that I'm chasing than be with you, because all you guys are egg-sucking, chicken-stealing gutter trash. Let me tell you what. I'm sure that Richard Nixon probably looked at Robert Bork and said, those are men out there. And all I got from here, you know, I got egg.
Well, that's a hell of a thing, call Robert Bork egg sucker and chicken stealer.
To me, that's what it was. I think Nixon just said, you know, forget it. I mean, I got no hope because I had two guys that acted like men. I will give you that. I'll give you that. Richardson and Ruckelshaus, they acted like men.
Well, they stood up for their principles, but you don't think that they were the right principles.
No, I do not. But I will tell you, they acted like men, and I'd rather be with men than some egg-sucking, chicken-stealing gutter trash like Robert Bork or the rest of that trash. Now, I know, I'm like any other man. I could go out with a pretty piece of mountain trash.
All right, let's forget about mountain trash. What did you have to say, Kurt?
First thing I want to say is, as a resident of West Virginia, where the Mountaineers live, and where we stayed loyal to the Union after the Civil War, to listen to someone talk about mountain trash, I take grave exception. I know that you don't mean nothing by that.
Well, I'm saying, I've been out with some of the prettiest mountain trash you've ever seen.
Well, you know something, that may well be the case. You've been out with pretty mountain trash. Well, you call a man egg-sucking, chicken-stealing, where I come from, that's a very dangerous word.
That you can't say man chicken-sucker. I didn't say a chicken-sucker. I said a chicken-stealer.
No, sir. I think you're right about that, guy. You said a chicken-sucker and an egg-stealer.
No, he did not. And what difference does it make?
Well, I think there's a very big difference. You talk about a man sucking a chicken.
I never said anything about you guys sucking chickens. I said egg-sucker. But the way you guys are acting, without any concern for the Constitution of the United States...
Wait, hold on for just a second here, so I can catch up here. Any concern for the Constitution... You know, we're not going to fight the Watergate fight all over again. We just want to give the historical outlines to it. If you want to do that, you do that in another time, in another place. As far as what you said about egg-sucking and chicken-stealing, I don't know. I think I vaguely remember the movie you're talking about.
I'm talking about The Wild Bunch, and I'm talking about Robert Ryan saying I'm with a bunch of chicken-sucking egg-stealers. I mean...
That's what y'all said.
No, I know what he said. He misspoke. So, what's the point?
Well, the point is that even in the midst of that political fight that was as acerbic, as vitriolic as any we've ever been through in this country, you can look at your opponent and say, now look at that, that's a man. And I got on my side. What do I got on my side? What did Nixon have on his side? I bet you Nixon would rather have been on the side of Willie Richardson. Is that his name?
No, the man's name is Elliot Richardson.
Who was Willie? Yeah, not the Willie at William Ruckelshaus. Oh, I'm sorry, William Ruckelshaus and Elliot Richardson. I'll bet you anything, he'd much rather be sitting with them, throwing back a few drinks, maybe even pounding shots, than that gutter suckers. I'm sorry. I'm so emotional about this.
Let's get rid of all the Wild Bunch references here, and we can just get back to talking about this case. Talking to Vernon Dozier, we're talking to Kurt Quidi and Guy Barton for the West Virginia State Legislature. We'll go to RC at Bradley Military Academy. RC, you're on the Phil Henry Show here with Vernon Dozier, Kurt Quidi, and Guy Barton. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bill, really enjoying the broadcast tonight, as usual. And I wanted to ask, Mr. Dozier, you're the teacher. Do you think that Archibald Cox was he rubbing Nixon the wrong way on account of he was all intellectual looking and he had a flat top and stuff like that?
I think that that's a good possibility. Your name's R.C., right?
Yes, sir.
I think that's not a bad statement, because I think Nixon had a problem with some of these eggheads, some of these four eyes that tried to walk into that White House and say, well, here's how it's all fallen together, Mr. President. I think he right away bristled at that. I think the president was a simple man. I think he was a man of learning. He'd been to college, certainly had been through the School of Hard Knocks, including service in World War II.
Yeah, but wasn't Nixon in the Navy?
Yeah, so what?
Well...
Excuse me, what does that mean?
Never mind. What does it mean, R.C.?
Well, I just said the Navy is not as good, say, as the Marines, but yeah, it was good.
Let me tell you something, son. That was World War II. World War II. All right, so they weren't just out floating around in the Persian Gulf, pulling it.
Well, I think that's pretty mean to say about that.
I'm not trying to be mean, but you're the one that said wasn't Nixon in the Navy, and then you're all, well, I'm saying, you know.
Well, let's just get past that. My main question, sir.
Hold on for a minute, then we get past it. I'm the teacher, you're the student, all right? When you tell me to blow it off and tell me to get past it, I look like about 100 yards of ass to anybody listening. Now, I'm telling you that Nixon was a tough guy and respected tough, and he didn't respect these eggheads and four eyes, just like you said this Cox was. The guy had a flat top and he had a tweed.
The guy had a flat top and a what?
Flat top and a tweed jacket.
Yeah, so what, he had a flat top and a tweed jacket? I own about 5 tweed jackets. I usually have a flat top. Well, I never had a flat top, but
But you had a flat tire.
What do you mean about, yeah, I've had flat tires.
No, I mean a guy walking up behind you and giving you a flat tire on your sneaker.
What are you talking about, kid? Are you some kind of an idiot? We're talking about...
All right, thank you very much, R.C.
Baba Booey, Baba Boop.
Thank you very much for that. Boy, I'm going to kick someone's ass.
I don't know he's going to do that.
That guy's your friend, isn't he?
Yeah.
Baba Booey.
Let me tell you something, Phil. I don't care. People can come on here and say, you know, whatever their little code word is.
You ain't never heard Baba Booey?
I don't care if I've heard whatever you call it.
Baba Booey is Baba Booey is what they say on a Howard Stein show.
Yeah, on the Howard Stein. You guys talking about Howard Stern? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Howard Stern.
Hey, you might want to say it right. I don't care. I wouldn't listen to that show if they paid me, okay? I barely can take a lot of the talk radio program.
All right, thanks very much, guys. I had to get out of that because it was driving me ape.
Well, I thought it was rather interesting. I thought it was interesting how Vernon paints himself into a corner. The Clockwork Orange comparison was offensive and vulgar and foul. Vernon talking about Archibald Cox being a four-eyed geek. And then, of course, just the entire discussion of Pat Nixon being slapped on the ass by a big fat slob in a derby hat.
Yeah, disrespectful.
Well, I mean, yeah, okay, but yes, that was disrespectful. But a big fat slob in a derby hat, you know, what we're talking about here is a film depicting the violent invasion of a home by a gang of scum that was hell-bent on causing all kinds of pain and anguish to the people that were in there. So, you know, forget about whether or not it was a big fat slob in a derby hat. All right, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, back for another hour of scintillating conversation, and like that, Matt, including the jazz that's been going on in Washington this week. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. All right, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. The world-famous, never to be forgotten, never to be duplicated, never to be, I don't know, never to be hired again. I'm just kidding, I'm kidding.
Well, that is a very negative statement, Phil.
Yeah, probably true.
Oh, shut up, probably true. What do you mean? Here we are, man. We are holding forth at the leading edge of entrepreneurial, what do you want to call, stuff.
What's that mean, entrepreneurial, what do you want to call stuff?
Well, you know, we are here. We are. It's the new economy, man. It's the new economy is all of these new companies, all of these different businesses, and all of them small startup and long-standing professionals, veterans in their field who are now going into business for themselves, such as me, Phil Hendry. So That's what we're doing. We're very happy that you guys have joined us. World Famous Phil Hendry Show is also online at philhendryshow.com. We also have our Game of the Week, which is going to be coming up again on Sunday. One of the things that did happen here over the last week or so is that Ted Bell, who had been a member of the broadcast team from our facilities at henryradio.com and our facilities at henryshow.com, it was brought to my attention that Ted is no longer going to be a part of the broadcast. I know that you had the situation, Ted, vis-a-vis the physical ill health, right?
I had a asthma attack that occurred during the game 2 weeks ago. I think it was the Denver Dallas game, and I couldn't breathe. I also had some issues with regard to what Steve Borzell was doing in the booth. I'm not going to make a big issue out of that.
Well, what was he doing?
I think Steve should be here to talk about it, but I had very serious issues with what he was doing. I asked him to stop. He continued. And so when I could no longer breathe, that's when I had to eventually be taken to the hospital, which, by the way, I want to make a statement here. I know that Steve is not a paramedic, but the fact that he had to lift me up and carry me out of the booth and then basically like a sack of cement throw me on the sidewalk,
Well, I had no idea any of this was going on. I mean, somebody could have gotten an inhaler for you, or someone could have...
Well, people could have gotten a lot of things, but I was picked up in the studio there, and I was carried outside over Bozell's shoulder, and I was dropped on a cement, and I guess someone inside called an ambulance.
Were you having a hard time breathing while you were laying on the cement?
I almost strangled to death because I could still smell what I was smelling in the booth. And
What was you smelling?
Bud, I'll wait for your boss to ask me that question.
Well, Steve Borzell is going to join us here from Corona, California. I trust that there are no hard feelings between you guys, but I guess... Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing, as good as I could be doing. Ted, I'm glad to see you. You're up and about.
I'm up and about. But let's talk, if we could, Steve. I would not mind at all talking here about what was happening in the booth at the time that I began to gag and eventually I wasn't able to breathe.
I've talked to Dolores Blazingham.
All right, hold on.
Wait. I've talked to Dolores Blazingham about this, Bill. All right.
Yeah,
You talked to Dolores Blazingham and she told you what? I guess she told you don't say anything because...
She absolutely did tell me not to say nothing, and I don't want to say nothing at this time.
Well, you know something,
and I would counsel you to watch what you say, because I don't want to have happen to you what I'm about to do to all the talk radio. And
you know something, Bozell, your lawsuits are about as effective as your brain half the time, because I'll tell you something.
There's no point in getting insulting.
No, I'll tell you something. Your lawsuit against talk radio isn't going to go anywhere. You're going to sue me. You're going to sue me, Ted. I'm Ted Bell, all right? You're aware of that, right?
Yeah, I'm aware that you're Ted Bell. I'm just like I'm aware Doug Danger's gay. There are a lot of things I'm aware of.
Doug Danger being gay has got nothing to do with me. I'm Ted Bell. I'm Ted Bell. And for you to think you're going to sue me...
I will sue you if you bring up any of the events, according to my attorney, and I can read this if I could, Mr. Henry.
What do you have?
I've got a statement that my attorney wrote down, and she said, take this into... the radio station or whatever you're going to do and read it on the air.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so your attorney is basically putting words in your mouth.
No, sir, she just wrote this. It's a statement right that I want to read right now.
Your attorney wrote this?
Yeah, but this is my feelings that my attorney has expressed.
Yeah, but your attorney wrote this.
We know this, Ted. Let him read what it is that he wants to read.
Basically that I do not wish to discuss the events of the Sunday afternoon at the Henry Radio Complex in broadcasting the Game of the Week. At that time and in that place, certain things occurred by way of my enjoying my lunch, which, given the pressures of my life, is one of the few things that I get to enjoy anymore anyway. Enjoying my lunch and also necessitating bodily functions, etc., etc. So I don't think we need to talk about it at all.
Something I got to tell you, Phil. What happened in that broadcast booth on that day
Watch it. Hey, Bojan, don't tell me to watch it, okay? I know what it is that I want to say to Phil, and I know what I want to say to the audience.
Well, he sounds like he's serious about suing. Let's just say this. Something happened in that broadcast booth that caused you not to be able to breathe very well.
Yeah, Phil, hold on for a minute. You can't say it caused you not... You can say something happened in that booth and also, oh, yeah, you weren't able to breathe. So what is that supposed to mean? Are you going to sue me if I say that what...
Yeah.
Okay, Phil, that's all I want to say. I don't want to sit here with this little tiny baby. Have a good time. It's all yours, Bozell. You can have the game of the week. You can do the play-by-play. It's all yours. And I want to give a warning to you, Dickman. Is Dickman there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, warning to you. You are going to undergo something in that broadcast booth that is, it will change, most likely it will change your life as well as your physical ability to process sensory things. I can't even... What he does when he gets into a broadcast booth and what you will be forced to endure, no man alive should have to put up with it. And not even my worst enemy.
Okay, Ted, thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. Whatever you say there, sport.
That was Ted Bell. Okay, so you're on your own here, Steve.
I mean, you. What do you want me to say?
Well, first of all, you can't tell us what Ted's talking about. I understand that. Would you acknowledge that something you did caused him to have a heart attack, caused his asthma attack?
No, I will not. I will acknowledge the fact that I did something, and it wasn't just one thing. It was part of the normal processes that I have physically.
Was it after you ate something?
I do not want to comment.
Well, I think that's a yes.
No, it is not a yes. As a matter of fact, it's a no. If you want to know, okay, I'll go right out and say it's a no.
So you hadn't eaten something?
No, sir, I hadn't.
This wasn't the result of you eating something?
No, sir.
What? What are you talking about, Bozell?
My name is Bozell.
Easy, bud, easy. Bozell, okay?
I'm sorry, Bozell.
And please call me Mr. Bozell. I don't need to take that from a guy with a plate in his head. I don't take that on a month of Sundays from my own children. A guy with a plate in his head, I would never take that.
Well, just ask you, Bozell, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about the fact that what happened in the broadcast booth and what happened to Mr. Bell not being able to breathe and having the asthma attack, the two things are not necessarily... I'm not saying that I caused it.
All right, you're not saying that you caused it, but Bell is obviously pointing in that direction. Now, you are threatening a lawsuit if he so much as goes public with any statement. Or even you'll countersue if he so much as tries any legal shenanigans that points to some act on your part lending itself to the or causing his asthma.
That's what I'm saying. Mr. Bell has a history of asthma. He's got a history of having taken an inhaler to school when he was a kid and being laughed at, and he's all ooh, I got to bring my inhaler, and that's the reason why he turned into this big loud pushy guy, because he was, compensating for being a, I better not say B word, but,
Yeah, about being a sissy and everything.
Yeah, is that what you're talking about?
Pretty much, yeah, because the guy's at school with his inhaler, and, I need my inhaler. And then he grows up, and he becomes, I'm Ted Bell, and he's got, this bar, steakhouse and everything. So I think a lot of that's coming from that. And then what I did in the broadcast booth and what I continue to do throughout the game and continue to do in the car home is a normal thing that you will do.
And it had nothing to do with you eating anything?
No, sir.
Well, what were you doing, sneezing?
I'm not going to say, because I don't want Bell commenting. Otherwise, it's going to be lawsuit a go-go.
All right, look, I thank you very much for your few minutes here, Steve. We do have to take a break. I wish you the best. I hope that whatever it is that you have going on there, Bud Dickman isn't subjected to.
He's got to say what he's doing, or I better get some workman's comp, or I better have insurance.
That's what you need, man. You need on-site insurance. You got to have insurance on a job.
Well, Bud, you can just use our company insurance then, if that's the... I don't know. I don't know.
Bob, if he's gonna do something,
I don't know what he's doing. Maybe we ought to have him.
You should give him a physical before he goes into the.
Sorry, folks. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil. I mean, I can't tell you what the hell this guy's talking about or what it is that bothers him or what it is that's causing his problems. We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. More news, the debt ceiling and the budget crisis and the government shutdown and the Peabody. It's world famous Phil Henry Show. Welcome back here to the El Pacifico, right out here on the westernmost edge of the United States of America. And this section of the program, brought to you by Ted's of Beverly Hills. No, I'm kidding. This section of the program, we're going to have on Dr. Ron Tarner, because this article that I saw is fascinating to me. This is the kind of stuff that I really dig, and I'll try and describe it, and I'll try to get Dr. Tarner on to do a little bit better job. Basically, this is the thing. There was a skull that was found.
Not this again.
Take it easy, will you? There was a skull found 8 years ago. It's a 2-million-year-old skull, and all I'm going to say is the reason why it's a big deal is because we used to think 2 million years ago there were all kinds of different species of Homo. You want to get belted?
No.
Then grow up, bud. You know, the word homo means man. It doesn't mean gay. It doesn't mean homosexual necessarily. There's homo sapiens. There's homo, habilis. There's homo erectus. These are species. And then, of course, there's man, homo sapien. And there's homogenized milk. And there's a lot of different ways that the word homo is used as a prefix or perhaps a root word. So don't, you know... Grow up a little bit here now, man. Move out of the junior high years. Move on into your high school years. Try to divorce yourself of those asinine instincts that you have.
What?
Don't say, I'm going to belt you.
He's doing it on purpose because he's an imbecile.
Mr. Henry's the one that's saying homo.
Hey, listen, Jack, I'm talking about a story here having to do with skulls and having to do with fossils and having to do with Homo erectus, okay? Which happens to be a species of fossil that the human race is... Oh, this is fantastic. Who do you got on the phone now? That's great. Is this Bud or is it... Excuse me, is this David or where... Turn off that damn... Get rid of the music, if you don't mind. Yeah, David?
I mean, Bud's got a good point. Are you saying homo what?
Homo erectus, which happens to be it's a type of human being.
All right, I mean, I'm just, when you say those words, Bud, just in case, have the alarm ready so that we are protected, Phil, because, look, I can't just have you saying these things without some kind of protection.
Well, I got news for you, David. If I hear one alarm, if I hear anybody fire off any sound effect, okay, I am going to be... Did he hang up?
Yes, he did.
Why did he hang up?
Well, generally, when he's all done talking, he'll hang up.
Even though I was talking back at him.
Yeah, he doesn't need to hear you. He just needs for you to get the message.
Oh, does he need for me to get the message? Well, I got news for him. He better get the message. Because if I hear one alarm, all we're going to do here on this program is talk about Homo erectus, which is the guy that...
That's the alarm.
Yeah, that is the alarm, Homo alarm.
Well, I need sexuality.
Hey, Bud.
I'm just doing what Mr. Hall said.
In this article on the 2-million-year-old skull, we find that there were not a lot of different species of hominids. There was... I didn't even say homo, man.
Why are you laughing? Because this is music about... In other words, you hear this music, you think, oh, yeah, okay, there's sex going on.
Well, I understand that.
Oh, do you understand that? Well, that's just great. I'm glad you understand that, Margaret.
Phil, you're very unattractive when you're sarcastic. Please don't do that.
I'll do whatever I... What do you mean? I don't care about being attractive, you know.
Well, I guess that.
I care about getting some stuff said. So in the history of the human race, we find now that our species, Homo sapien, was a species... You know, that's very childish.
Well, you're the guy saying it.
Maybe the one and only, not the one and only, but one of just a few species of humans that existed, not a whole bunch. Okay. So if you look at the tree of evolution, it isn't so much a tree with a whole bunch of branches. It's that we are the trunk of the tree, or...
The shaft?
Yeah, the shaft. Now, the... So that's what that's about. And I thank you very, very much for your indulgence, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, on that particular topic. Got some really weird stuff. So that's all I was saying. I mean, I'm not, and then I thought it was interesting, and you guys come in and you butcher the thing six ways to sunset. That's fine with me. We have that new graphic? Yes, we do.
Yeah, I got the new graphic up.
That's fantastic. So it'll be it'll be Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman on Sunday at the Game of the Week. Now, this is a really kind of wrecked story. Security guard at Midtown Victoria. Nah, should I really read this?
Oh, God.
Security guard at Midtown Victoria's Secret discovers a dead fetus in a bag of apparent teenage shoplifter. Good God. A suspected teen shoplifter was busted Thursday toting around a dead fetus while swiping lingerie. What the hell is up with people, man?
Well, you said before the show that it was the world is not as bad as we think.
No, the world is not really... You know, to be honest with you, like I said before the show started, this kind of horrible activity, this kind of horrible, horrible discovery, shall we say, when we hear about it, and we hear about it here in California, or you hear about this story in Missouri or in Nebraska or in Kansas or in less populated, for more remote places, and you hear about it within the few minutes that it happened, as opposed to hearing about it a week later or 2 weeks later, you tend to think that the world's going to hell in a handcart. But the fact is, this kind of stuff has been going on for years and years and years and years. And like I said, you know, you can get in a time machine and go back 120 years to New York City on the Lower East Side and take a walk through the Lower East Side of New York City 120 years ago, if you make it to the other end, if you survive that walk through New York City 120 years ago at the Lower East Side.
You're saying you get killed.
You could, if you were upper class, maybe not killed, but you'd sure as hell get robbed, maybe beaten. If you tried to resist, they'd probably kill you. You know, it was a dangerous city. And excuse me for saying this, folks, in that city, New York, 120 years ago in the Lower East Side or even Midtown, how many dead fetuses do you think turned up? Probably more than you even want to count. Because, you know, that was birth control back then, just as it is for some women today. I mean, only then there were certain procedures that were illegal. So you were getting kids being dropped down wells, kids that were being drowned, kids that were, you know, fetuses being buried or even infants. I mean, it happened a lot. It happened a lot. And so for us to sit here in modern times and say, well, now isn't this terrible? Look at this, a fetus. Why, this is New York City. I understand that we should be probably better at dealing with a social problem like this. And we probably are. We probably are. I mean, one of these kinds of situations is probably a major improvement over the way the human race was acting a century ago. But nonetheless, because it's so bloody shocking, and because we get this news, like I say, within the second that it happened, we seem to think that the human race, you know, morals-wise, the human race, you know, the very substance of our morality is just deteriorating. Because it's such a gruesome thing. It's like, it's beyond belief. And we report these things more graphically now. I'll give an example. There's an article that I looked up. The very first bust of a bathhouse in New York for being busted because there were gay men there having sex was in the first decade of the 20th century, around 1906, 1907, something like that. It was a bust by New York City police on a place that the New York Times described as a building where a lot of things of ill repute were going on. And immoral activity among men was going on. Not once did they ever mention the word homosexual or gay. Not once did they ever even mention the word sex. Not once did they ever even mention, they didn't mention anything having to do with anything prurient. They just said immoral activity among the patrons, an all-male establishment. And that was it. Today, man, we report every last little detail of what's going on. And that further shocks us. Okay, so
What was this article again?
It was the first arrest. It was the first bust.
Of a guy taking a bath. No.
Of a guy taking a bath. A bathhouse. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show. Jack Ball, man. World famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. There's radio, and then there's, well, then there's the Phil Henry Show. We're kind of sitting out here by ourselves on the edge. We'll get to some phone calls here. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. And let's go to Steve in Denver. Hiya, Steve. You're on the Phil Henry Show. What's up?
Hey, Phil. I heard you mention a arrest in New York City of a bathhouse, and that was supposedly at the turn of the century, of the 20th century. Is that what I... did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
All right. Now, there was also an arrest made, a series of arrests made, in a similar establishment, and that was also in the city of New York, and that was also on the same date. So I'm wondering which of these places the record is indicating. Did you happen to know the name of the place?
I don't, because I you know, it drives me nuts. I used to have three discs that were the front pages of the New York Times, and I lost one of them. I was just looking for one right now.
Because there were two different establishments, the record shows.
So you say the New York City police raided two different places?
The New York City police raided two places that were both bathhouses, and these were both raided on the same day. Now, it says that the New York City police, elements of the New York City police, detectives, and there might have been members of the city attorney or the district attorney, the investigative teams, that went in. Because what this was an undercover operation that then alerted the police, the larger uniformed force, to then come in and make a series of arrests.
Were they in the same part of town?
I'm not sure what parts of town they were in, and I don't. If you don't have the record, I don't know what the addresses were. But there were two, if not more, in a citywide raid of bathhouses on that day in New York City.
All right, so, well, that's interesting, because the historical article, I read an article that was talking about morals arrests and the history of morals violations, homosexuality, free sex, what have you, just vice, and it was a history of police action, law enforcement, as well as the actual criminal record, and I only saw one place that was indicated in the record.
Well, I know that only one would probably be indicated in the record, because the others were owned by an individual that I would tell you at this time, which is the reason for my phone call, was owned by a relative of mine, an ancestor of mine. My name is Steve Pickens. I live in Denver, Colorado now, and the family has been in the Colorado area since the 1950s, but the family, the Pickens family, had moved west from New York in the early part of the 20th century, around the 30s, to find new business opportunities. We opened up, or I shouldn't say we did, my grandfather and then my uncles opened a string of bathhouses here in Denver, staying one step ahead of the law.
So your family operated the bathhouse that got arrested, the bathhouse that got closed in the newspaper, or just one of the others?
One of the others, because, you see, my relative spent an enormous amount of money buying off the New York City Police Department for a long time. And what I believe happened, Phil, was that the pressure, public pressure otherwise, most likely political pressure, because you understand the general public never really was all that aware of these establishments. The city of New York, Manhattan particularly, in terms of where the residential section of the city was and where these bathhouses existed, were they're not the same area of town. And so the public did not so much put pressure on the police department and the attorney as did politicians. And so that was it. But my family spent an enormous amount of money paying off the New York City police to protect the bathhouses that we operated.
Were all the other bathhouses that were arrested, I mean, excuse me, that were, I keep saying arrested, that were closed, were all the other bathhouses, were they owned by your family?
Every other one was owned by our family. The one that was that made it into the newspaper was, I want to say it was owned by the Balaban family or the O'Briens, a name like that, I can't remember, similar to that, Balaban or O'Brien or Salazar, a name like that.
Well, you say a name like that.
Those are three different names. Those are almost three different nationalities.
Well, that's correct. But it wasn't our family, is my point. That was the one that was raided by the New York City police.
So the whole establishment of bathhouses were raided, but they did not make it into the newspaper in terms of the report.
No, they did not. So we felt very betrayed at that time by my great-grandfather left a series of notes, notebooks, diaries that my sister and I finally read here about a year ago. And it was shocking what he was up against and what his dying words were. The last 6 months of his life were spent writing furiously into these notebooks and in a manner that could only be described as ravings about the New York City police and then later the Denver police and the bathhouses and how he felt that the family fortune was almost squandered in paying off police officers who ultimately never did protect the business, but turned and allowed the politicians to shut us down. So if you'd like to take a look at these notebooks, I'd like to get your opinion on this because it drove my grandfather mad, and it is something that has preoccupied my sister a great deal.
No, I don't know what I would do with them, sir. I wouldn't want to have the responsibility to... I'd love to see them. Don't you think you should maybe, if you want some opinion, donate them or at least turn them over to some academic institution?
Well, I'm not so much interested in giving these notebooks over to an academic institution for the erudition of students as I want to get an opinion, perhaps an attorney is who I need, a legal opinion on what our options are in light of the fact that my grandfather was driven, my great-grandfather was driven almost insane by the amount of money that he kept paying cops only to see that his bathhouses were being closed down until ultimately my great-grandmother said that he died in his sleep, his heart stopped. They can never really say it probably was old age, but he died and the coroner said that he'd stopped breathing and blood had stopped flowing. It was just a combined shutdown of the organs, and he never was the same.
I'm sorry to hear that. Your name is Steve Pickens?
That is my name, yes, sir. And
were these bathhouses operated under that name?
No. The bathhouses were operated under the name Baker. That was my great-grandfather on my mother's side. My sister took the name Baker, even though her last name is Pickens as well, and for the purposes, and this is something that's going to probably shock you, and I hope it doesn't. My sister and I are married, and the reason for that, if I may...
Don't say married.
Hold on, bud, hold on.
The reason for that, if I may, was because we grew up together, and we're really the only company that each other ever had for a period of time as we were on the move, opening bathhouses and closing them.
Who were you with?
Yeah, what part of the family? Was your great-grandfather still alive?
No, this was my father.
So the great-grandfather, grandfather, and father, all of you were opening bathhouses?
All of us were opening bathhouses, and they were being closed as fast as we could open them up. And even with an enormous amount of money that was being spent to buy off cops, word to the wise, Phil, don't ever pay a cop off because he will turn and stick it in your back as sure as God made green little apples. And I learned that the hard way. And so as a last act of defiance... my sister and I were married on January 16th of 2006, and that's our way of making our statement.
All right, well, Steve, that's a wild story.
Let me ask you something, Steve. You married your sister. She's very intent on getting the money back, is that it?
My sister has been very intent on looking into the possibility of recompense for the enormous amount of money that my family spent on cops, on bagmen, on paying off cops to protect these bathhouses where gay people could go and for a couple of minutes of each day have a couple of good time. You know, I'm not going to describe what went on. I won't acknowledge what went on, but they could have a couple of laughs, and it didn't matter.
How much money do you think how many police agencies are we talking about?
Well, I asked my sister, and she thinks it's in excess of 12 or 15 police departments across the country that my family paid off to keep a bathhouse open. And in the end, not one bathhouse remains open. And as a newspaper reporter in Denver said, the Pickens family springs a leak, which I thought was cute.
How much money?
Oh, it has to be in the millions by this point if you take into consideration inflation.
Are you planning a lawsuit of some kind?
I can't go public with a lawsuit because of my marital status. I've married my own sister, and I've gone public with this before. You're not the first one. And we would only take ridicule. We're going to have to do this in a proxy manner of some kind.
All right, Steve. Well, I got to take a break. I appreciate your call very much.
Well, I was hoping that after the show's over, you might go over some of these records with me, and if I could just talk to you a few more minutes.
No, I can't, although I'll tell you what, I'll turn you over to my producer.
Well, I talked to that dumbass.
Yeah, I know this guy now.
He's on hold, so you talk to him. World famous Phil Henry Show. That's a bizarre story, if ever I heard one.
Yeah?
Yeah, you talk to him. The world famous Phil Henry Show. Let's take a break. We'll be right back here with more in our final segment of this here program. Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. World famous Phil Henry Show here. What did this guy? Welcome back, folks. We just had a guy on the phone who had some of the wildest stuff to say. We were talking about a police raid on a bathhouse in New York City at the turn of the 20th century. It was the very first recorded, and there might have been others, but the very first recorded such action, I think either in New York City or it couldn't have been in the country. It must have been in New York City. And it was for morals. It was for, you know, people behaving immorally. They didn't come out in the papers in those days and say gay men or homosexual men. Now we got this guy. You've been talking to him, Bud?
Yeah, the guy said I just got off the phone with him.
Yes, here's Bud Dickman with our report.
Yes, thank you. The guy said that his dad was a guy by the name of Brew Baker, or his great-grandfather was Brew Baker. And,
like in the movie, Brew Baker, huh?
What?
No, B-R-E-W, right?
Yeah. And he had a bathhouse, and so did his great-grandfather. And then his dad did it, but his dad wasn't good at it, because his dad thought that it would be better if it was just a place of people to take a bath.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about a guy to just talk to.
Go ahead, bud. So this guy, who...
This is the guy's dad.
So the grandfather and the great-grandfather ran these bathhouses with the full knowledge that these places were used by gay men?
Yeah, you also said straight people did, too. Straight, like a man and a lady.
Oh, get out of here. Are you telling me that a man and woman went there to have sex?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, think of the times. Think of, it was casual. It was a casual place.
Yeah, so he said... But then his dad took over, and his dad didn't get it. That's what he said. His dad didn't get it. And his dad would open up these places and go, you need to take a bath.
Do you need to take a bath?
I don't see what's funny.
But I do. So the poor guy, huh?
Yeah, his dad says, well, you know, we have all these bathhouses. Let's do a bathhouse.
Did his father know that that the police would bust the place?
No, his dad thought it'd be okay. Well, wait a minute. Hello? 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 Mr. Pickin? Hello? Yeah? Well, you want to talk to Phil?
Mr. Pickens, it's Phil Henry again?
Yes.
All right. I just want to be clear, sir. Your father took over these bathhouses from your grandfather and your great-grandfather, right?
That's correct. My father took these over, and he decided that he wanted to continue in that business. My father had gone to school to be a pharmacist, and he'd gotten his pharmaceutical degree. And so that was well and good until my grandfather died, and my father came into possession of these bathhouses and started placing ads in the newspapers as a good place for you to go and get a bath if you were in need of one. And my father didn't quite understand that these places were used for sex. He thought that they were places where you went to take a bath. So he had some of the larger communal baths torn out, and he put in individual bathtubs. And it was that time he said to my mother, "No wonder Grandpa," and we called my grandfather, he called his grandfather Grammer, and we called him Grandpa or Grandma Cracker or something like that. Although he called his...
That's fine, sir. We understand. You know, he was talking about his grandfather?
Yes, he was talking about my great-grandfather or my great-grams. And so he said, no wonder they went out of business, because these bathtubs are too big and there's no privacy. And my mother said yes. So they spent a good... overall, the number of bathhouses that we own, they must have spent a good million to a million and a half renovating and putting in single bathtubs and showers and bath towels and that kind of bath mats and buying soap and things like that.
This is amazing that one family could miscommunicate so perfectly. You've got a great-grandfather and a grandfather that opened these bathhouses for the specific reason of enabling gay people, homosexual people as they were called, to have sex or to meet, and then along comes your father, who thought all along that these bathhouses were for taking baths.
Well, yes, and I will tell you that I don't mean any. I don't mean to disrespect anyone or my grandparents, but I thought the same thing. I thought the same thing, and my grandfather was the one that was driven insane, and eventually put all of these ravings into a notebook that my sister has just now had the courage to read. The insanity, I think, came because we'd paid off so many cops, and my father didn't understand that either, because he didn't have to pay one single cop. The interesting thing was, though, that my father wound up losing just as much money, because the idea of people taking a bath at a bathhouse was a bad idea. Fortunately, he had a pharmaceutical degree.
Now let me ask you a question, and I don't mean to pry. You married your sister. I don't think you gave me a good rundown on that, you know?
In terms of what?
Why?
Oh, well, I married my sister because it was the most logical thing to do. It was, we got along well. She was a great conversationalist, and we went to movies together. We did the normal things that young people do. We dated. I took her to the prom.
Your own sister?
You took your sister to the prom?
Yes, I did. Some people have indicated that we're not welcome in their homes. We have been told by some people not to go near their houses, and we've also been told that any offspring we have...
Do you have children?
No, we do not.
Are you planning on having kids?
I've learned not to make a comment on that. We would just like to have the kid, and then people are going to have to deal with it.
Well, if it comes out with one eye?
Shut up, Bud.
Bud, that is very rude.
No. That's okay. That's all right, Bud. I'm glad you asked that question. If the child is born and it has some physical deformity, such as one eye, or is hopping around on one leg, then surprise, deal with it. You know.
So you're just going to kind of spring it on society, huh?
Well, there's nothing. I don't see a law or a rule written someplace where you're supposed to give everybody warning. Hey, I married my sister, so watch out. We're about to have a kid that's a cyclops. I'm not prepared to do that.
So what's the upshot of this whole bathhouse thing?
Well, the bathhouse, my sister is obsessed with getting to the bottom with how much money is owed. And then she wants to look further into my grandfather's ravings, because these notebooks are filled with insane statements having to do with life, the hereafter, premonitions that he's had. We we don't know.
Well, the best of luck to you. Steve Pickens, right?
If that's the name I gave you, that is not my name, but I believe that is the name I gave you.
Is the family name Baker? Hello? How about that?
Man, I got hung up. He didn't want to say his name.
Well, now, wait a minute. What is the family name?
I don't know what the family name is, because the guy just said, if that's the name I gave you. No, he said Pickens is not his name. I don't know. All right, so thanks so much, sir, and good luck, you know, with your sister there and the life that you've planned together.
Don't laugh at them.
I certainly will laugh at them. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. We'll see you guys, we'll see you on Monday. Tomorrow night is, happy honeymoon there to you, Matt. See you guys this weekend.